on Tesayin Amud Aleph, about 10 lines down from the top, Shita. We're talking about a case where the Gazlan went ahead and he bought the Sada from the Nigzal, from its original and genuine Bailin. And we were wondering about whether or not buying the Sada Gzula from the Gazlan, from the Nigzal, would automatically indicate that the Gazan is trying to save face, he's trying to restore his credibility, and therefore he's purchasing this Sada from the Nigzal on behalf of the Lokeach, meaning the Gazlan had sold Karka to the Lokeach. And you may recall that back on Tezayin, more precisely on the bottom of Tezvav and Beis, Rav made a statement in response to Shmuel's question that when the Gazlan goes ahead and buys the Karka from the Nigzal, he's doing it for the purpose of restoring, or shall we say, clinching and validating the kinyan of the Lokeach. And that's called, in the language of Rav, Ma Mocher Lo Rishon L'Sheni Kol Zchusha Tavol Yod. In effect, whatever rights, ownership rights, the Gazlan now acquires in the Sada from the Nigzal, he basically does so on behalf of the Lokeach. So now the Gazlan receives money from the Lokeach, who bought the Sada from the Gazlan. And in return, the Gazlan, having received this money, is makne to the Lokeach all schusim that he has in this karka, even future schusim, if he'll ever actually own the karka subsequently. That's the das of the Gazlan. Therefore, when he buys the Sada, he's doing it almanas for the purpose and on the condition that the Lokeach should be Zocha. And the Gemara explains the reason why he does so is Nichale Deleku Behem Nuse, that a person benefits from the fact that he has established his credibility, his Nemanus, Kedeshi Yishar Neman Vieno, if he wants to retain that status. Now, Pshita, the Gemara says, Zavna orta v'yava v'matona lav l'ukmi kami lokech kaboy. Instead of the Gazlan in these scenarios purchasing the Sada from the Nigzal, from the Bailin, from the original owner, the rightful owner, what he did was he inherited it, or he... These are various scenarios in which the Gazlan acquires ownership over the Sada HaGzula, but in a way that does not at all indicate his desire to work on behalf of the Lokeach. Let's go through the various cases. Let's say before the Gazlan actually went ahead and paid for the Sada, because again we want to understand why he's paying the Nigzal, the Bailin, for the Sada, he sold it to someone else. So he's not just selling it to Ruve, now he's selling it to Shimon. He's really trying to make a profit on this. And if he buys it later from the Nigzal, go figure out if he really did it on behalf of Ruvain, the first buyer, or Shimon, the second buyer. You know, you get the impression he's not really interested in Nemanus here. He's not being Omid B'diburo. He's selling it, you know, shooting in all directions to as many people he can sell it to. He's really trying to make a profit on this deal. And then we have the case where he bequeaths it to one of his children. He gives it as a matana. And then, after doing all these, he purchases it from the Nigzal. So the Gemara establishes that there's no question that in these cases, Pshita, he has no interest in purchasing the gaz, the gzela from the nigzal in order to lahamida, to set it up in the rishus of the lokeach, to clinch and validate the lokeach's ownership over this field. Now, what we've presented is the understanding of the sugya according to Rashi. In addition to Rashi, the Ramban writes that according to Rashi's pshat, says the Ramban, if he sells the sada to a second person before he bought it back from the gazlan, then neither the first buyer or the second buyer can come and claim ownership. Why? Because with regard to the first buyer, we say, well, you know what, he's not interested in nemonus because he went to sell to the second buyer. And that's the same thing we could say about the second buyer. He's not interested in ha'amodas nemonuso. And therefore, based on the logic of Rashi, that this gazlan is in some sense, you know, trying to make amends over here. He's trying to establish his nemonus, or there was one day in the Gemara Masechta which you said that it is, he's trying to avoid people calling him gazlan, or okay, calling him gazlan. I mean, the fact that he keeps selling it over and over again, that seems to indicate that he's not interested in restoring his reputation or getting rid of these klolos that people are calling him a gazlan, the lokeach is calling him a gazlan. Now, the Ramban quotes a Ravid that the Gemara is talking about a case where the gazlan sold the karka after he bought the karka from the nigzal. And the Ramban says he doesn't understand this pshat of the Ravid because once he bought the karka from the gazlan, we assume at that point that he purchased it on behalf of the lokeach. And at that point, the lokeach has full-fledged ownership over this karka. And you can't take it out of his rishus just because the gazlan went back to his old ways and sold the karka to someone else. But the Ritva tries to, I think, perhaps lower the flame on the Ravid. And he writes that Takef liachas shekonas akarka be oso mamad chazar umachol yacher. What the Ravid means that immediately after he bought the karka, the gazlan bought the karka from the nigzal, he went ahead and he sold it to a second person. So it's T1, T2, T3, but they're all bazachar zeh, almost taken from yad. T1 is when the gazlan sold the karka to lokeach Aleph. T2 is when he bought it back from the, or paid the nigzal. And T3, he sold it to lokeach Beis. And that's how the Ravid interprets this sugya. So says the Ritva. Okay, now, what if he steals a field from someone who owns the field and is called a morish, which means that person who owns the field, when he dies, this gazlan will inherit him. Nafal le b'yerusha, the Gemara says. So let's say, for example, the gazlan stole his own father's field, sold it, and then his father subsequently died. Now that karka falls to the yerusha, falls through yerusha to the gazlan himself. Now the gazlan says, I'm the rightful owner of this karka. I want to go back to the lokeach to whom I sold the karka and confiscate the karka. I want it back. And to our surprise, I mean, the scoundrel who stole his own father's karka, now he's boasting the fact that he inherited it. Maybe he inherited it because he caused his father so much tzar. I don't know. As the Gemara says, paradoxically, Yerusha Memeli Velav Iu Katora Chabasra. Meaning the whole halach of Rav, that ma mocha rishon l'sheni kol skus shetov liyodo, meaning that the gazlan purchased the field on behalf of the lokeach, that doesn't apply here, because the gazlan did no active he made no effort to acquire the field, and if there was no tircha, there's no gili das that he tried to be mamid the karka biyada kona biyada lokeach with that hamodas nemodas that we spoke about, and therefore in this case, paradoxically, he can go ahead and confiscate the karka from the hands of the lokeach. Now, there's a long discussion here in the Rashba about a sugya in Ksuvis which seems a little bit similar. And the sugya in Ksuvis again addresses a case where a person, entered into sort of a transaction, and that transaction, in a sense, would limit him and undermine his ability to get something later on when somebody dies and he yarshins them. Again, a very complex case. We're talking in Masechta Ksuvos about a case of a Ksuvas Imo. What it means is that there's a Yoresh who sells a Sodeh which he inherits, and that Sodeh has a Shibud on it for the Ksuv of his mother. And he tells the Lokeach when he sells it to him that, again, although it's quite clear that this character that he's selling him has a Shibud to it, he's not willing to back up that shibud. He's not willing to guarantee the lokeach anything. Now, when he says that, he doesn't realize that he's, in a sense, undermining his own position. What he's saying is that if this sada will be confiscated, will be ripped out of the hands of the lokeach in order to pay for the ksuv of his mother, he's not responsible for that. Now, at the end, his mother actually died. He, the seller, inherited his mother's ksuba. And now he wants to say that if I stand in the place of my mother, just like my mother could have taken this sada out of your hands because of the shibud of the suva, so then I also, as a yoresh, inherit those rights from my mother to take the sada out of your hands. So as a yorish of his mother, he has rights to collect this ksuba, and I'm sorry, to collect the karka, to confiscate the karka from the lokeach, because there was a shibud. But yet, since he told in his original sale, he stipulated that he doesn't want achrayis, so then what right does he have to cause the lokeach a loss when he himself will not back up that loss, because, you know, he's saying in his original agreement that he doesn't have a chrayis, but now he wants to come as a yoresh and take the field. The maskon of the whole sugya there in Ksuvis is that the yoresh was not makabel achrayus, and achrayus himself he, right, aval es achrayis atzmo came kibil, and therefore v'lo yachal litrof me'alokeach, which I understand to mean that, you know, since in the original agreement he denied any responsibility, right, was mafki himself from any achrayus, therefore b'toras ben later on as a yoresh of his mother's ksuba, he has no right to be mafkia the soda from the hands of the lokeach. And the Rash wants to know how to compare that to our sugya, because here also in our sugya, initially the gazlan sold a field which he stole from his father, and in the context of that gzela, the halacha that we've established here in the name of Rav is that if and when the gazlan acquires ownership over this field, he can no longer take it away from the lokeach, because he sold it to the lokeach. Now, his father dies and he wants to come to Toras Yoresh. So do we go back to his original relationship, his original identity? And that seems to be what the Gemara in Ksuvos assumes. You know, he can't now, you know, throw off from his shoulders all the monetary implications of his original transaction as a seller of stolen goods, in this case a stolen field, and take on a new identity, a new category of a Yoresh. Even though, again, that's to his advantage to say that he wants to become a Yoresh now, and then he has rights to get the karka. But as a Gazlan who sold the karka, a Gazlan / Mocher, he doesn't have rights to take the karka out of the hands of the Lokeach. But perhaps the answer to the Rashba's question is what the Gemara is saying here, Lav iu katarcha basra, that in this particular case, there was never a situation in which the Gazlan as a Mocher precluded his rights to get the karka back. Meaning, the potential is always there for the Gazlan to get that karka back if he, the Gazlan, could establish his valid ownership over the karka. He forfeits those rights if he buys the karka for the purpose of the lokeach. Here that he didn't do any tircha, and there was no gili das that he wanted to buy it on behalf of the lokeach, he never actually forfeited those rights that are inherent in buying the karka back from the nigzal of getting that piece of karka, now that he's the rightful owner of the karka. Now we have another case. Gavi ihu bechovo. The case now is that a person steals the karka from so-and-so, and that so-and-so owes him a chov. Now he wants to gain ownership rights over this karka in lieu of collection of his chov. So basically he makes a barter exchange between himself and the nigzal, between the chovos that the nigzal owes him and the karka which he stole from the nigzal. It's a trade-off. And now the question is, once the nigzal was gove this karka as a gvias chov from, once the gazan was gove this karka as a gvias chov from the nigzal, does he have rights now again to confiscate the karka from the lokeach? So in this case, the Gemara says chazina depends. Let's check it out. E isle arach ritzi. If the nigzal had another piece of karka from which the gazlan could have been gove his chov, he didn't have to collect it from this piece of karka that he sold to the lokeach. He had other choices. V'yomer, and yet the gazlan says hi be'inu, and he specified, singled out this karka. Is then we assume the reason why he wants this karka is li'ukme kami lokeach kaboy. He's buying it on behalf of the lokeach, as we said, to smoothen out his reputation. But ilo, if this was the only karka that was left for him, the gazan, to collect his chov, is then zuzi hu deboy ifrue. What the gazan is motivated for is to collect his chov, and he only has one option to collect it from this particular karka. He's collecting his karka as dmei achov. He's not collecting it for any other reason. He has no altruistic motive here. His motive is to collect his chov, and therefore he can go back to the lokeach and confiscate the karka from the lokeach. However, here's the next case. Yava niale b'matana. Suppose the nigzal, I don't know why, decides to give the gazlan the karka of matana. As the nigzal has had, you know, he's had so many headaches from this karka after it's stolen, and now maybe thinks that the gazlan is doing tshuva or whatever, so he allows the gazlan to own it through a matana. Now, at this point, having received the matana, does the gazlan have a right to confiscate the karka from the lokeach? Do we apply the principle of Rav, that when he sold the karka to the lokeach, he sold it with all future schusim that he might have ownership rights in this karka? One of them is by receiving it as a matana. Is pligibar of achar avina. Chad omer matana ki yerusha,
Daha Mimela. The Gazan has not indicated any sort of effort that he put in order to acquire ownership over this gzela. It fell in his lot as a matana. And therefore, he has rights to take it away from the lokeach. There was never gili das that he's doing it lahamid nemanuso, to clear his reputation. V'chad amar, the other opinion is matana kimecher. We view matana as a mecher. Ah, you'll ask me, well, there was no effort on behalf of the makabel matana, on the part of the gazlan to acquire ownership. He just fell in his lot. You know, it's like man min hashamayim, he got a matana. No, the Gemara says he loved the torach the arzei kamei. If not for the fact that the gazlan came in front of the nigzal with pius, you know, to try to appease him and to stroke his ego and reestablish the friendship and so forth. Lo avi yoev le matana. Certainly, the nigzal would not look at his gazlan and give it to him as matana. So that tircha itself is like a mecher. The only difference is in the case of mecher, he actually shelled out money from his pocket in order to pay the nigzal. Here, there was a psychological project, an entire effort on his behalf of Hartzos Divrei Pius in order to get the Gazlan, the Nigzal, to offer him the Sada as a Matona. Kihechid Leikum Behem Nusa. And therefore, all this effort, why was he so eager? After all, he already sold the karka. What is he gaining by appeasing the Nigzal and achieving this victory of receiving this gzela, this karka as a matana? The answer is he's doing it on behalf of the lokeach, meaning in order to be mamid his nemanis, to clear his reputation vis-a-vis the lokeach. Now back on Tezvav Amid Beis, you may recall that the Gemara had two opinions as to why we assume that when the gazlan pays up the nigzal and buys the karkabat, he's doing so on behalf of the lokeach. Marzuch's opinion was because he didn't want to be called a gazlan. And it was Ravashi who said that he wanted to be mamed his nemanus, to reestablish his credibility. Here, if you take a look carefully, the Gemara's language is Nichole Deleku Memnusa. That's exactly Ravashi. And Tosis points out that from this Gemara, obviously, we accept the opinion of Rav Ashi against Marzutra. In the Gemara, if you recall, had various nafkaminas, some of which were accepted, some of which were rejected. Now the Gemara wants to know what happens if the gazlan buys the sada. He did all that effort in order to buy the sada. And of course, the yesodas of Rav is that he did so in order to be mamid his nemanis and give this karka back to the lokeach. Again, the lokeach is actually in possession of the karka, but in order to establish his absolute rightful ownership. The Ad Emas, the Gemara wants to know, Nichole de Lekum Bemnuse. Until what point in the process, we'll soon see that there are three different time periods in the process of selling the karka to the lokeach and then going ahead and buying back the karka from the nigzal, up till what point can we assume that the tirch of the gazlan in purchasing this field is a demonstration that he's interested in buying it on behalf of the lokeach, of hamadus nemanus? So let's go through the three opinions. The first opinion, Omer Rav Huna ad shas hamada bedin. Imagine the nigzal now is coming to, after he bought the field, to take the field back from the lokeach. I use the word to confiscate. Now, the lokeach, finding out that he purchased a stolen karka, he comes to Beis Din and he wants his money back from the mocher. He has opened up a tick, as we say. He has opened up a lawsuit against the gazlan. The gazlan, from his part, has not yet paid the nigzal the money for the purchase. In such a case where there already was hamada bedin, that's the closure point. We no longer assume this gili das concept that the buying of the karka on the part of the gazlan is a demonstration, a declaration that he's there to be mamin the Musa to buy the karka back from the Nigzal on behalf of the Lokeach, but rather he's interested in buying it for himself so that he can take it away from the Lokeach, because he went this far in delaying this whole process of paying the Nigzal and buying it back. Again, I'm talking about the Mocher / Gazlan, to the point in which that he, the Lokech, is already suing him as a Gazlan. Give me back the money that I paid you. That's called Hamada Bedin. This is such a late moment in the entire procedure that we're not going to believe that the Gazlan now, after he was sued in a court, is going to go ahead and buy it back for the purpose of awarding it to the Lokeach. He's already involved in a lawsuit. You know, the lawyers are facing each other. You know, both the lawyer of the Lokeach, who's suing the Gazlan, and the lawyer of the Gazlan. I mean, there's already, you know, it's hot and heavy here. It's a face-to-face combat. So to say that now, in the context of that, Hamada Bedin, with Lokeach is suing the Gazlan, give me back my mos, now the Gazlan is going to go ahead and pay the Nigzal for the sake of Hamada Biyado? No. He's not interested at this point, he, the Gazlan, in Hamadas Nehmanus. Chiyah Bar Rav, in the second opinion, is willing to give him a little bit more time for this Gilui Das, and even after Hamada Bedin, and Bezdin already issued their verdict that the Gazlan has to pay, or shall we say reimburse the Lokeach for the monies that he spent in buying the karka, we still say, let's give him a little bit more time. The Gazlan may still be thinking, let me buy this from the, you know, I lost the case, meaning Bezdin is telling me that I'm going to have to pay the Lokeach back and reimburse him with the monies that he paid. You know what? Let me settle this for once and for all, regain the trustability of the Lokeach by going in and buying the karka back from the Nigzal. And what's the latest point? Ad demata adrachta liyode. Bezdin will give the Lokeach what's called a shtar adrachta. The shtar adrachta is a psak din that allows and guarantees that this Lokeach could collect from the Gazlan, or from the nechassim of the Gazlan, wherever he finds nechassim that belong to the Gazlan, in lieu of the payment that the Gazlan owes him to repay him and can compensate him for the monies that he paid the Gazlan to buy this stolen karka. And Rashi points out here that the period of time of the Mesiris Adrachta, you know, it's from Amoda Bedin until the Mesiris Adrachta into the hands of Lokeach, is 90 days. Once the 90-day period ends, it terminates, and the Shtar Adrachta has been handed over by Bezdin to the Lokeach, at that point, if the Gazan goes ahead and he purchases the Karka, then there's no Gili Das. Then we're not going to say he's doing this on behalf of the Lokeach. It's already too late in the process. Rav Papa Amar, he wants to give it even a longer stay, even after the Adrachta was handed into the possession of the Lokeach. Ad demaschalon yome achrata. After the Shtar Adrachta is given over to the hands of the Lokeach, the next stage and the final stage in the process of Lokeach collecting the karka from the Gazlan is what's called Yomei Achraza, Yomei Deachrasta. They do a public auction, and the Lokeach locates, he identifies the karka of the Gazlan that he would like to receive as collection for the Dmei karka that he paid for this field. He comes to Bezdin, telling them exactly what, you know, where's the karka, the Gush and Chelka he identifies it. They do a Achraza. They do a public auction. They say, who wants to come and buy this karka? It's free, it's on the market to be purchased. From that moment on, we assume that this payment that's due to the Lokeach from the Gazan is final, and if the Gazan goes out now and he buys the karka, he's not at all being Megala Daito that he's buying the karka from the Nigzal on behalf of the Lokeach. He's doing it on his own behalf.
Maskif lo Rami bar Chama. This whole situation, this whole din, that the Gazlan goes and buys the karak from the Nigzal on behalf of the Lokeach, Michti, let's analyze it. Hai Lokeach b'may kani, l'hayara. There's no kinyan in Mimon Afshach. The original kinyan in which Lokeach paid the Gazlan and he received a shtar mecher from the Gazlan, hai shtar chaspa, the Almahu, it's worthless. What is this shtar? Shtar is on a stolen piece of property. Can I sell you karka that belongs to someone else? And on the other hand, who made a maisa kinyan on this karka now? It's the Gazlan when he buys it from the Nigzal. So how does this work? How does the Lokeach acquire ownership? Through what mechanism? Through what method? Does he acquire ownership? You can't acquire ownership on karka without a maisa kinyan. It doesn't seem that the Lokeach did a maisa kinyan over here. And Tosis asks a question. He says, even if the shtar is a chasva mi'alma, but isn't it possible that the Lokeach acquires ownership over the karka through chazaka? Maybe after the Gazlan paid up the nigzal, the Lokeach went down to the field to do a chazaka. And Tosis here, Rav Askel Hai, answers that from the Gemara itself, it seems that the Lokeach immediately with the purchase of the Gazlan, the Gazlan bought it from the Nigzal, that itself clinches the acquisition of the Lokeach on this karka immediately, even though he doesn't do any Maisa Kinyan. And that's what bothers the Gemara here. Where is the mechanism here by which the Lokeach becomes the proud legal owner of this field? The Gemara's kashi of Rambam Marchom is difficult for another reason. Even if I grant you that the Lokeach admittedly did not make a Maisa Chazak as a Kenyan, but he did pay Mos for this Kaka, why can't those Mos that are in the hands of the mocher / Gazlan, why can't those serve as kinyan kesef for the karka that, you know, that the Lokeach bought on the first round? But okay, if it's not on the first round, let it be relevant now and active to generate a chalos kinyan mos. And Tosis is so bothered by this question that he says that the mos become mos milveh. And then we have to learn the sugya of Makadish b'milveh, and just like you can't be Makadish with the milveh, here too you can't be Makadish the most that are in the yad of the mocher as a milveh. And that leads to a long discussion, but it's not for us now. Omale Rava. Rava answers Rami Bar Chama, and he says the following. Tehe b'mamino. How does this kinyan of Lokeach operate? With what mechanics? He calls it ma'amino. In other words, the Lokeach tells the Gazlan explicitly that he trusts him that in the context, in the framework of this mechira, he, the mocher, the Gazlan, will do whatever he has to do, go to all ends of the world, to make sure that the karka remains in the possession, to validate and activate this kinyan. And therefore, according to Rashi, we're talking about a case that the Lokeach turned to the Mocher and he says, look, I rely on you that you'll give me the karka. So why is that significant? Says Rava, Bahu hana delo ka'amar le midi v'kasamech ale tarach u'maisi le v'gamar u'machni le. There's a new halacha here of a kinyan of shavah kesef kikesef, of hana. And the hana here is that Lokeach doesn't say a word. You know, why did you rip me off and sell me a stolen karka? But rather, he relies totally on the mocher as a mocher, innocently expecting that the mocher will do whatever he has to guarantee that Lokeach remains the owner of the field. And now, when the mocher goes out of his way with this tircha in order to make sure that he lives up to this nemonis, this trust that the Lokeach put into him, then at the very moment that he buys it from the Nigzal, the original Bailim, he has a Gmiras Das to be Makne to the Lokeach. Now, we're not out in the clear yet, because when we say to be Makne to the Lokeach, I mean, you're going back to the time of the Mechira, and at what point was the Kinyan effectuated here to validate the ownership of the Lokeach? The mechanics here is still unclear. All right, there's a great Hanoah, and the Mocher, the Gazan, is thrilled because look at the amazing amount of trust that the Lokeach has in me. He doesn't open up his mouth. He's totally reliant on me. And Tosis Dibur Maskil Bahi, which is a little, two-line Tosis, he says, Havikilu Amalo, Sadizute Knuy Lecha Lit Kisha Ekachena. And Tosis here is spilling the beans over here. He's revealing something amazing, that the original Mechira of a stolen karka to the Lokeach, when the Lokeach paid the money, that is the Mechira that Limafreya becomes validated, through which Lokeach eventually becomes the proud owner. Obviously, right now he's not the proud owner because the Gazlan has not yet acquired ownership over this karka from the Nigzal. So the Lokeach can't say it's mine, it belongs to the Nigzal. But the Hakna of the Mocher was for the future, Lishe Ekachena, which is a sugi that we're about to get into, that depends on a sheet of Rameh called Adam Makne Dover Shelo Poliolo. Meaning the Mocher is in effect selling something now which he doesn't have rights to sell. It's not his to sell, but he's selling it for the future when he will buy it. And that's a fascinating twist here in this whole sugya. You know, the first impression that you get here is that the Mocher, when he purchases the karka from the Nigzal, is doing a purchase on behalf of the Lokeach through the mechanics of Zachin Liodim Shalom B'fonav, etc., etc., and he's willing to do that because of the great Hanoah that he got, because he trusts him, blah, blah, blah. But Tosis is learning something else, that in order to understand and appreciate the sugi, you're going to have to go down the road of Adam Makne Dover Shelo Boliolam. And that's going to come up again in the next Tosis, Divya Maskil Ma, which hopefully we'll touch on in just a minute. But first, let's learn the Gemara of Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes, at this point, is pouncing upon Rav. And he says the following. Masiv Rav Sheshes, I have a brisa that says the following. Masha irash me abba mochur lecha. That which I will inherit from my father, I'm selling to you. He's a fisherman, and he says, whatever fish will be caught in my net is sold to you. And the Braisa says, are you going to tell me, Rav, that the Gazlan sold to the Lokeach that which is not his, but will become his later on? That's exactly equivalent to this Braisa, that I sell you something which belongs now to my father, but I will inherit it after my father's death, or fish that will be caught later on. Obviously, at this point, when the Mocher, in quotation marks, made that declaration, he doesn't own it to sell it, and therefore the Bryce is right by saying, Lomar Klum. And the Kasha of Rav Sheshes from this Bryce is a little bit tricky, because let's read the Sefer of the Bryce. The Sefer of the Bryce seems to move a little bit closer to the position of Rav in the case of the Gazan who bought back the field from the Nigzal. The Bryce says, Masha Irish Mina Abba Hayom Mochulcha, Masha Talmud Sudosi Hayom Mochulcha, Dvarv Kayomi. In a sense, the Braisa retreats from its original position and allows a sale on something that's not yet yours, if it's going to be yours today. Again, how does he know that his father is he's going to inherit his father today? Apparently, his father is on his he's breathing his last breaths. He's a goses. How does he know that there's going to be fish in his net today, because apparently it's a good day for fishermen, and based on past experience and past records, we know that the fish are going to be there. And basically, Rav Sheshes here is emphasizing the ratio of the Braisa. Without paying attention right now to the Seifa, in the case of the ratio, that something's going to happen down the line in which the seller is going to acquire it, that's Eino Domakne Dover Shelo Baliola. Now, at this point, the Gemara could have already pulled out, you know, the rabbit from its, you know, its hat and said, you know, maybe Rav holds like Rabbi Meir, that Adam Makne Dover Shelo Baliola, the prices of the, you know, reflects the view of the Chachom, Eino Domakne Shelo Baliola. And that's this Tosus Ma, in which Tosus says that this kasha that the Gemara is raising is not addressed to Rav Bedavka, but rather to the ultimate halacha, which we pass on like Rav, that the karka remains, if the Gazan later on purchases and acquires the karka from the Nigzal, the karka remains forevermore in the hands, in the possession of the Lokeh. That's how we pass on. And yet, we paskin later on, this is a suya on daf ayin beis amid beis, like the chachamim ain't other than mak the dover shel b'liom. So the kasha of Rav Sheshes is really a stira. Again, Rav himself is off the hook, says Tosafot. He may very well, and that's what the Gemara is going to say later on, adopt the position of Ravi Meir, that other mak the dover shel b'liom, but that's not going to help us. And when Rav Sheshes presented this kasha, Omar Rabbi Bar Chama, Rabbi Bar Chama's response was "Hi Gavra, v'hai Tiyufta." In other words, Rav Sheshes is really a Gavra. He's a great man. He's an Adam Gadol. He's a giant in Torah. And basically, to defend Rav, you know, you would need a great answer, because "Hi Tiyufta," the question of Rav Sheshes is a very powerful one. Omar Rava Gavra Kachazina, but Tiyuvta lo Kachazina. Rava says, wait, calm down a minute. Don't get carried away, Rabbi Bar Chama. Again, Rav Sheshes has a good kasha. If you think it's a good kasha, he's going to Gavra Rava, not going to deny that. But you know what? I don't think that we have to come up, rack our brains in order to defend Rav from this kasha. There's a fundamental difference between Rav and the case of someone who's selling something that he hasn't inherited yet, or a fish that he hasn't caught in his net yet. Hacha, here in the case of the Lokeach, who purchased a stolen property, Samcha Daite, the Lokeach has full das to rely on the Mocher, that the Mocher, who's the Gazan, will go back and do whatever he has to do, if need be, purchase the field from the Nigzal in order to guarantee that the field is his. And in that case, says Rava, with given that Gemar Das, we have that Svara that we had before, the Svara of Rava earlier in the Sugya, that Bahu Hana, that based on the fact that Lokech is Somech on him, the Gazan, the Mocher, is so thrilled that he indeed functions as a Mezakeh to buy the field on behalf of the Lokeach. And even back, way back at the time of the Mechira of this stolen property to the Lokeach, the Lokeach didn't say a peep. He implied he has full reliability on the Mocher. And the Mocher is excited about that. And he basically, in his mindset, as a result of the Gemira's Das, and the fact that the Lokeach is relying on him totally, he, the Mocher, says in his mind, Liksha Ekne Emkarenu, which we said operates according to Rav. However, here, Hacha, in the case of the future inheritance from his father, Lo Somcha Daite, the Lokeach really is not serious about this purchase. He, you know, every mechir requires das machten das kona. The kona doesn't have a smichus das, which is an integral part of the mechira. And why is it that in the case of the mocher and the lokeach there is smichus das on the part of lokeach, and not in the case of the Yerusha?
Hacha, in the case of the lokeach who bought stolen property, somcha daiti di ozel tarchu maisile, the mocher has within his power to guarantee that this mecher will be a final mecher, will be valid dedication to the cry Gaza, because he's putting his reputation here on the line. He doesn't want to be called a Gaza. But hach, in the case of someone selling Yerusha, or he's selling fish that haven't yet been caught, lo samcha daite. Why? Because there's no definite, the mocher has no way of controlling the situation in which there will be a Yerusha, or there will be dugim that will be caught in the net. Now the Rashba explains over here that when the Gemara says Hacha Samcha Daita, keep in mind, says the Rashba, that he, the lokeach, doesn't realize, he's not aware of the fact that this is a stolen property. He really thought that he's buying karka. He's being somich on the mocher. But there's an extra smichus dasya that he's assuming the mocher is not a fraud. He's not trying to be marama him. But here in the case of a Yerusha that hasn't yet come to fruition, or catching fish, there's no smichus das. Shalchua, they sent this question on Rav, l'kami de Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, Omer Lahu, and Rabbi Bar Zavda's response was similar to that of Rabbi Bar Choma. And he said, Zu eina tzrifu lefnim. Don't bring this question into the Beis Medrash, because no one's going to be able to answer this question. This brisa is an explicit contradiction to Rav. Omar Rava, again Rava playing the same role, Zot Tzricha Lefnim V'Lefnai V'Lefnim. There's no problem in bringing this into the Beis Medrash to ask the Bnei Yeshiva. They'll already give the answer. Hacha Samcha Daita V'Hacha Lo Samcha Daita. Havi Uvda V'Pumpadisa. This case actually came up in Pumpadisa, and they paskined like Rav, Ma Mocha Rishon L'Sheni, Kol Zechus Shiyah Bar V'Yodo, that when the Lokeach, when the Gazan went ahead and purchased the Karka from the Nigzal, he did it in order to be Mamid, the Karka, in the hands of the Lokeach. The Osve, they asked him the Kasha from the Tosefta, from the Bryce that we just said, the same Kasha as Rav Sheches, Omer L'Rav Yosef, Zo Eina Tzricha Lefnim, V'yomer le'abay tzricha lefnim v'lefnim, hocha samcha daite, and hocha lo samcha daite. Again, a repeat in which Rav Yosef, like we saw earlier in Rabbi Bar Choma, we saw it in Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, they said this is too difficult, too powerful of a question to raise. There's no response to it, but Abai says that Abai was a chavrus of Rava, so he defends or projects the same as far as Rava, namely that in the case of the Loket, there's a smichus das, the Gazlan, based on that smichus das, is going to live up to the expectations of the Lokeach. He's going to guarantee, make sure, whatever he has to do, that the Lokeach is satisfied with this mecher, and he therefore purchased the karka from the Gazlan, from the Nigzal, on behalf of the Lokeach. That's not so in these cases. But wait a minute. Now we got to get to the Sefer. The Gemara now asks, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Sefer. How are we going to justify the Sefer if the Reisha is predicated on the assumption, the principle of Eino Demach Nidover Shalobo Liolam? Then, okay, so it's Mashi Yirish Hayom, Mashi Talim Tzidosi Hayom in the Sefer. That's not a Dover Shalobo Liolam. Why is that valid? Om Rabbi Yochanan, Sefer, Mashi Yirish Mi'aba Hayom, Mishum Kvod Aviv. In other words, this is a separate Takonis Chachamim in the Sefer. You're right, says Rabbi Yochanan, there's no logical reason within the universal principles of Halacha, the mechanics of Eino Demach Nidover Shalobo Liolam, that this kinyan could be Chal. But since the son is in a dire straits, his father's about to die, he needs this sale desperately. And Rashi and the Mefarshim say he needs it, it's the last line in the page, in order to buy tachrichim, in order to bury his father. He needs Moz for that. He's in dire straits. That's called Kvod Aviv. Shalo lahasho b'bizoyon, Rashi says. Is there for the Chacham made a takana, and they recognize this mechira. And the Ritva points out that it's lav dafka Kvod Aviv. Any mace
you know, who would involve himself if anyone is in charge, the Chevra Kadisha, whoever it is, or even a Mess Mitzvah situation where he has to make sure that any mess, even if he's not related to him, will be buried properly and with Tachrichim, and that sale has to be recognized and validated in order to get the monies for the Kvod HaMess, then the Chacham made that Takana. Masha Tala Mitzudasi Hayom. Why did the Chacham make a Takana in that case? And here we turn to Tezayin Amid Beis. Mishum Kidei Chayev. We're talking about a fisherman who's in dire straits. He doesn't have food. He doesn't have money to buy food to put on the table. He needs this sale to be validated immediately, urgently, in order to acquire mizonos and michya. If a person sells to his friend on a, you know, within the context of a daily masuk matan, a regular classical sale, whatever is going to come up from his mitsuda in the next month, the next year, whatever, that's not for the purpose of michya. He's not urgent about this, but, and therefore the Chacham will not take make a takon and institute and validate this mechira. But if it's mashatalam mitzudasi ayom, because he needs it today, it's a dire, pressing need to validate the sale, the Chachamim are going to validate the sale. That's the takana, hefker bezin hefker. Now we get to the sugi that we mentioned earlier. Omer avhun amar rav, ha-omer l'chaver sada shani lokeach l'chshakachena knuy l'chame achshav. I intend to buy a field, I want to sell it to you now, even before I buy it. And right now, this sale should be binding in such a way that I can't rescind and back out of the sale. Kana, says Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, that is a final kinyan, and there's no way avoiding this kinyan, even if the mocher decides, at some point, that he doesn't want it. And basically, this is all predicated on Rav's acceptance of the Shita of Rav Meir, as we'll see in a minute, that Adam Makne Dover Shelo B'Leom. Omar Rava Mistavra Milsa De Rav. Okay, now this is the more complicated part of the sugya. Bistada Sada Stam. In other words, we need that the Lokeach, who receives this Sada, have what we call smichas das. If the mocher said to the lokeach sada stam, he didn't point and single out any particular sada, but I will buy a sada and it's yours, then the recipient has a smichas das that it will come, because there are many fields out there in the market. Aval says Rava, however, besada zu, if the deal was that this particular field is sold to you, and this particular field only, then what are the chances that he'll be able to buy that field? Maybe yes, maybe no. Here, the Mekabel, the recipient of this mechira, the kone, doesn't have smichus das. Mi yemar, the Gemara says, the mazvin le miele, who says that the owner of the field will agree to sell that field. And if there's no hamino here, if he doesn't really trust it, or he doesn't rely on this, then he can't say that when the mocher buys the field, he, the mekabel, will be kone the field, because the lokeach is relying on the mocher's nemon, the monis that'll be omid ben amonuso. That's not the case that Rav discussed, says Rava. When Rava said a person receives such a deal and he has complete smichus das, that's because it's sada stam. There's no question that the mocher will be able to buy one field. Sada zu, that's already a whole different story. Now, this is Rava's opinion about Mistavra. Mistavra means, in the language of Rava, I would accept the logic of Rav in the case of Sada Stam. I would not go as far as applying the logic of Rav to Sada Zu. Velokim, which is a Lashon of Shvua, Omar Rav, Rav himself said it, afilu b'sodizu, even in a case where the mocher, the makne, designated, singled out one particular soda, he didn't take some sort of general ischaivus to present, to supply the lokeach with the soda, but a specific, even that is included under Rav's validation of the kinyan in such a way that the mocher cannot rescind and void this contractual agreement. Now, you'll ask, why should this mekach be chal? It's very possible that the owner of the field, the current owner of the field, would not agree to sell it. But nevertheless, I have to tell you, says Rav, that Rav went this far. Michti Rav k'man omer l'shmaita, because Rav himself was standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Meir, the omer of Meir Shita's other makhdi dover shalom b'liolam. And we're going to soon see that Rabbi Meir, in his original formulation, spoke about a case of Soda Zu. What was the case? The Sanya. Ha'omer li'isha eskachi li li'achash esgayer. The man is now a non-Jew, and he marries her, gives a kedushin, should be chal, after he goes through the process of conversion of geirus. Or li'achash esgayer, on the case of a man marrying a woman who's not Jewish, and he wants his kedusha to be chal later on after her gerus. Or, for example, an eved says to a Jewish woman, an eved can't be mekadesh, an eved kanani can't be mekadesh a Jewish woman. He says, li achas shtachrer, let this kedusha be valid after I receive a shtar shichur, which means after I become a full-fledged Jew. Or a man turns to a shivcha and he says, here's kedushin liachash eshtachari, after you receive a shtar shichur. Because again, you can't be mekadesh a shivcha. There's no kedushin tovsin in shivcha. There's no yichus. Another case where a mayor again validated the kedushin liachar sheyomus baalech. A man marries, he tries to marry, he gives kedushin to a married woman. Obviously, that can't be done. But he says that this kiddush should be valid after your husband dies or divorces you. After the chalitza is given, after your sister dies. And in all these cases, I'm just going to skip, is Rav Meir Omer Mekudeshes. The Chacham say, Ein Mekudeshes. He can't enter into a chalos kiddushin for the future. Right now, this chalos kedusha is impossible. It's a dovash lo bali olam. But yet, Rabbi Meir says that mikudeshes, the kedushin is valid. And in all these cases, Rabbi Meir is holding that other makne dovash lo bali olam. Veha says Rava, isha kisadizu damya. In all the cases that Rabbi Meir delineated, enumerated, they're all sadazu. Why is it similar to sadazu? Because he's singling out a particular woman. Let's go even beyond that. Can he guarantee that he's going to make sure that this woman will be misgayer, or this man will be misgayer? Right? Let's say you have an eved of shifra. Can anybody guarantee that the shtar shifra is going to be forthcoming? That depends upon the masters. And in all these cases where there's no vados, that what is meant to come about will come about, it's not like a case of Soda Stam where he'll be able to buy one field out of the millions of fields on the market, yet Rabbi Meir validates the Kedusha L'mafreya. When the Tanai is Mekuyam, even though at the time of the original Maisa Kinyan or Maisa Kedusha it was unclear, very unclear whether this would come to fruition, but nevertheless, l'mafreya, once this condition comes to fruition, the kinyan is chal. So obviously, Rav Meir is willing to say that you can sell a field, even if it's sadazu, which belongs to so-and-so, and the lokeach is gomer das, and when that so-and-so sells the mocher, the field, automatically at that point, l'mafreya becomes, by virtue of the original Maisa Kinyan, the possession of the lokeach. Now the Mishnah back on Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis mentioned the case and the din of somebody who finds a shtar chov in the shuk, and can he return it, To whom does he return it? In what conditions does he return it? Now, the Mishnah wants to turn to not shtar chov, but other types, other categories of shtaros which he found in the shuk. Amar Shmuel, hamotzi shtar haknoa b'shuk. If a person finds a certain shtar in the shuk, in which the lov is makna to the malva a shibud nechasim, and this shibud is an absolute, unconditional shibud, means even if the lova does not receive the most, does not receive the loan, he took upon himself a commitment to pay for those most if he had received them. If he doesn't pay, then when the Hebrew says im lo mishalim gove zos hamalva minechasim elu shenishtablu bo. If the lover doesn't pay up this chov, this fictitious chov which he accepted upon himself, then the malva could collect that chov from the chasim mishubadim, meaning from the lekuchas of the mischayev. I don't know whether to call him a lover here because he's not really a lover. So that's what it says in the shtar. Says Shmuel, in such a case, the finder, yachziro, he can return it labailim to the malva. He can return it to the malva. And the Rishonim ask, why shouldn't we be afraid that the whole shtar was a mezuyav, and the malva is going to collect from the so-called lova, but shelo kedin? Why do we give it back to the malva? And they claim that this shtar is not going to be validated until kium, until we can bring in the edim who was signed on the shtar, or other edim, and validate the signatures. Once that happens, there's no chash ziyuf. And therefore, when the malva will come to collect from the lekuchos of the lova, again I'm calling him the lova loosely here, then if the lokeach or any of the lekuchos tied a mezuyav, then through this kiyum hashtar we're going to validate the shtar. Now once the shtar is validated and we've removed the chashash ziyuv, Shmuel's of the opinion that returns the kenechkar unto the shtar, and the regular dinim of shtar apply, shtar kov yotcha my boy, that if the lova, so-called lova, claims parati, he's not believed. The imishum dekos of lilvavs v'lo lova, normally you find a shtar alva in the street, you have a problem because maybe it's a shtar muktam, you know, maybe you'll be go from lukuk shlo kedin, but here in this case, says Shmuel, ha-shibdei nafshei, he was mishabed himself unconditionally to pay this chov, and it's the shibud is written, is recorded as an evidence in this shtar, and the shibud doesn't depend upon when the matmos will be given. So in the classical halva, we don't really know if the shtar fell and was found, and that's the race of the shtar. We have to worry about the possibility that the lova never received the most, and if the shtar was never given over to the malva. But here, that the lova wrote an absolute, unconditional eschaivus to pay this chov, there's no chash. What are you going to tell me? Because of lilvav v'lo lova, on that possibility, he wrote this shtar, and he's meshabin himself. The imishum piron, but maybe you're going to tell me that even if the shtar is valid, and we said there was kiyum on the shtar, we should still worry about the possibility that the lov already lived up to his commitment and he already paid up this chov, is lo chayshin lepiron. And lo chayshin lepiron is predicated on the fact that despite the nefilas hashtar, the shtar still has its chazokah, that it has kashrus. Again, the Rishonim here talk about possibilities like maybe the lova paid back part of the chov, not the whole chov, and so forth and so on. But fundamentally, this is the sheet of Shmuel, lo chayshin lepiron. Once a mekayim the shtar, then we don't believe him to say that he paid back. Dim isa de pare, this is the super svara of Shmuel that we had back on Daf Yudalid, is mikravi korale. A lova would never pay up a chov until he's absolutely certain that the shtar was completely destroyed, was ripped to shreds. So if the shtar is still in existence, that itself proves that there was no piron. So in other words, the halacha of tfisas bala shtar, that's a prerequisite in shtaros, that really has two dimensions to it. There's a tfisas bala shtar and there's a cheskes hashtar.
The cheskes hashtar means that if the shtar is in existence, the very lifeblood of the shtar, the fact that it wasn't destroyed by the lova or by the malveh, that the lova would guarantee that, that itself gives a certain chazokah to the shtar. It doesn't give a full chazokah because the shtar is now still vulnerable against the tainus mezuyah. But in this case, says Shmuel, once there was a kiyum on the shtar, then there's no room for a tainus mezuyah. And then we have the full-blown, full-fledged tfisas baal shtar. That's why the finder can give the shtar back to the malveh. Omer Rav Nachman, Abba, my father, Min Safri de Daidi de Mashmuel Ava, he actually was the appointed scribe, the official scribe in the Bezdin of Shmuel. Vavino kvar shita kvar sheva. I at that age remember from my childhood, my young years, I was 6, I was 7. Udecharen, what do I remember? Davin Makrasi Viamre, they used to make a public declaration, they would say, Hani Shtara Knaisa the Mishtaki Bashukan Adrinal Marahu. Anyone who finds a shtar hakna in the shuk, he can give it back to the malveh. Amar Rav Amram af anan tnina. I have a mishnah later on, and based on that mishnah, I think I can prove Shmuel's position that we're not choshesh in a case of a shtar to piron, and that's even if the shtar is not in the hands of the malveh. And what does it say in the Mishnah? It says, "Kol Maisa Bezdin Hareze Yachzir." Any shtar that was mekuyam in front of Bezdin, meaning the Edom came and they recognized their signatures and they guaranteed that there's no counterfeit here, and then Bezdin puts a handpeg on the shtar, which is a kind of a seal, like a notary seal, that testifies to the fact that there was a kiyum on this shtar. So it's a yatsim. Somebody finds the shtar, then he gives it back to the malveh. Why? Because the kiyum through this henpeg testifies to the fact that this shtar was a kosher shtar. There was no ziyuf here. There was no counterfeit. There was no fakerai here. And Bezdin writes this henpeg on the shtar in front of the baldin. The baldin means the mischayv, the one who stands to lose from this henpeg, which is the lova in this case. So since at the moment of the writing of the henpeg, the lova said nothing, he didn't claim, I didn't yet get the money. You know, they wrote it on such a date and the monies were not forthcoming. It means that the lova certainly received the money. He received the loan, as it says in the shtar. You could ask, but maybe the lova was going to come and claim parati. Why do we return the shtar to the malveh? Alma lo chayshin lepiron. A lova would not allow the malveh to retain possession over the shtar if he already paid back the loan. Reb Zera says that that mishnah is not a proof, and he deflects the proof from the mishnah of a mekuyam of a henpeg and bezdin. Amalei Reb Zera. Reb Zera turns to Reb Amar and he says, "There's no proof." To the effect that ain't choshen l'piron. Masnis in the Mishnah is talking about a case of bishtari chaltasa. These are cases of a shtar that Bezdin hands over to the malveh in a case where the defendant refuses to pay his chov. So Bezdin goes down to his nechosim, they make an evaluation on behalf of the malveh of the nechsei alova, and they give him the shtar, which certifies that this property now can be confiscated by the malveh from the loveh kidin, and it's his. The adrachta, or for example, a shtar that's given to the malveh by Bezdin, if they didn't find any nechasim of the loveh that the malveh could collect from, but they write in the shtar that they certify that the malveh could continue running after the nechsei alova until he finally finds karka that he can use for his payment, the payment of his chov. In all these cases of shtar chaltasa and shtar adrachta, lav b'nei piron inhu. The concept of piron is totally irrelevant. I mean, these shtaros cannot be paid up. These shtaros are simply rayos in the hands of the malva that he can collect in a chosim of the lova. Therefore, there's no proof from this Mishnah, says Reb Zera, that lo chayshino piron. Omar Rav Avahani lav b'nei piron inu. Is it really certain? Is it true that in those categories of shtaros there's no piron? For Amri Nardoi shuma hadar. Back in Narda, they formulated the halacha that if land was evaluated by Beis Din to be collected from the Lovev on behalf of the Malveh, Hadar, it could go back to the Lovev. The Lovev still has rights to redeem that karka. If he acquires liquid assets, he acquires cash, and he wants to pay that cash to the Malveh and get back his karka, even after Beis Din did this whole process, is Hadar. The karka reverts back to the lova and he pays the money. V'yomar Amemar. Amemar testifies, Ano mi Nardoi, Ano, I came from Nardoi. And nevertheless, severely, the Shuma Hadar Liolam. That this halach, that Shuma Hadar, is not just that we give the lova an extension of, let's say, 12 months to gather together some funds and redeem his karka back from the malva. No, it's Liolam. So it comes out that Shtari Chaltosa and Shtari Adrachta really are subject to Piron. It's very possible that the Lover gathered together the funds, paid up the Chov, got his Karka back, but these Shtaras somehow got lost. And now you're going to give these Shtaras back to the Malva. He's going to be able to collect from the Lover second time around. The Lover already paid up. Ela Amar Rava. If a person finds a shtar chaltosa or an adrachta, the reason why he returns the shtar to the malve, even though there's a possibility that the lova paid up the chov and he redeemed his karka, the amri, we say about the lova, iuhu di afsid anafshe. If he went ahead and redeemed his karka and paid the cash value to the lova, he brought financial distress and loss upon himself. To be in the pare, when he pays back this chovi boile lemikre l'shtare, he should have absolutely guaranteed that these shtaros that are in the hands of the malva will be ripped up. Inami, alternatively, lemichtav shtore achrina iloi, he should get a shovar, he should get some sort of receipt that would testify that he already paid paid up the malva. And the Gemara says, why would he need another shtar? Dimidina ara lo boile meheder. According to the Iker Adin, the main thrust of the law, the malve has to return the shtar to the lova. I'm sorry, I said shtar. Take that back. I meant, what we're questioning now is whether or not the halacha of redemption, meaning that the lova can now fork up some money over to the malva and get back his karka, is that mikra din or not mikra din? In other words, do these rights of the lova to force the malva to give back his karka to him, is it recognized by the din, by the halacha? And the Gemara says no. It's really the malva who returns the karka to the lova as a matter of, to be a good Samaritan. Mishum vasisa hayosha v'atov b'eni Hashem. He's doing what's right. That's the basis for pshara, by the way. And for going lifnim mishur sadin, going beyond the strict letter and demands of the law. Hu di omer abonin teheder. And that's why the Chachamim said that the lova is allowed to be porea the chov and get back his karka. Hilkach, therefore, may reisha hu dekas zavin, and he boil the michta shtar zvini. It's according to strict halacha, says Rava, the loaf is now buying back the karka from the malva. The malva is going to agree out of the goodness of his heart, or because of the takanas kachamim, to sell the karka back to the loaf. And the loaf is not just being poreis chov. And whenever you buy a piece of karka, which the loaf is doing now, he needs a shtar zvini, he needs a shtar mecher. And if there's no shtar mecher in his hands, and he leaves in the hands of the malva the chaltosa or the adrachta, he was mafsid himself. And therefore, we have no hesitation, we're not inhibited to return these kinds of shtars to the Malva. But now, Rava continues and he says, but Gabi Shtar Chov, in the case of Shtar Chov, Ma'ikal Meimar, why aren't you Choshesh L'Piron? So you're going to argue in Isa Depare, Ipoil L'Mikre L'Shtar. You're going to argue, as Shmuel does, with the compelling logic that the Lova should not have agreed to pay back the Chov without getting back the Shtar, to make sure the Shtar is destroyed. But Ema, perhaps Ishtamuti Kom Ishtamitle. Maybe at the moment of Piron, even though the Lova demanded his Shtar back, he did his due diligence, he wanted to see that Shtar, you know, burned to a crisp, but the Malva was Mishtamit. The Omele, the Malva says, L'mochor Yavinoloch. Right now I don't have it on me. The Shasa Piron has come. Hashta Leslie Gaboy, I don't have it here. You know what, you can rely on me tomorrow, I'll destroy the Shtar. Inami apshite the safra zayrle. Or perhaps the Lova made an agreement with the Malva. You know what? In case I ever need another loan, I'll let you hold on to this shtar for a certain period of time, so you don't have to pay a sofer to rewrite the shtar. And therefore, Rava says that it's very possible that we are choshesh l'piron against Shmuel, and there's no proof from the Mishnah of Shtari Chaltosa and Shtari Adrachta. Omer Rabbi Avoham Rabbi Yochanan Motzei Shtar Chov B'Shuk Afal Pishakosu Bo Henpeit Lo Yachziru. If a person, again, before this we were talking about a Shtar Akna, now we're talking back in the case of a Shtar Chov, and even though it's Mekuyim and has a Henpeit, and there's no question about the authenticity of the Shtar, nevertheless we do not Lo Yachziru Labayim, we don't give it back to the Malva. Lomi boy ech the low cost of bohen peg. In such a case, ikalameh rakosav lulvos velo lova. Right, at what point do we know for sure that the lova got the most, he received the loan? That's it, when there's a hen peg. Bezdin is only going to create the hen peg when the lova is there, bifnei baldin, and the lova is not complaining and yelling and screaming and saying, I never got the loan. So that's for sure, we don't want to give the shtar back to the Bailim, there's no henpeit there, and therefore it's quite possible that the Lova never received the money. So if the Lova is claiming Ladam, we can believe it. But Ela Filu im Kosovo henpeit, the Shtar has a henpeit, and therefore there's no reason to believe the Lova if he would claim that he never received the Mos. Umayniu, the Mekuyam, they were Mekayim the Shtar in Bezdin, and that was in front of the Lova, so there's no question that the Halva took place. The Lova doesn't say a word here in front of Bezdin. Is nevertheless Lo Yachzir, because according to Rabbi Yochanan, as opposed to Shmuel, Chayshin would be wrong. It's very possible that the Lova paid up the Chov, he's going to be relieved with a Ktainis Parati, even though the Shtar still exists in the world. Why didn't the Lova take back the Shtar? And that we had all the svaras of Rava before, that maybe the Malva was Mishtamit, Ishtamuti Ka Mishtamit. Eisvei Rav Yirmiya L'Rabbi Abba. What about the Mishnah of Kol Maisa Bezdin Hareza Yachzir? Meaning, if there is a Shtar found in the Shuk and it has a Henpeit on it, then we do replace it, we do give it back to the Malva. And how could Rabbi Avo, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, have said that we do not, chashon, we can't give it back to the Malva? What about the Mishnah? Amalei, so Rabbi Avo responded, Yirmiya Bri, my son Yirmiya, lo kol maisa bezdin shavin. Don't make a general, all-inclusive rule equating every single case of a maisa bezdin. You know, we're not going to say that in every case of Maisa Bezdin we will return the Shtar to the Malva. Ela, Kigon Shehuchsa Kafron. The Avo's claim is that when does the Mishnah allow you to return this Shtar to the Malva? That's only if the Lova has no credibility to claim Parati. Why doesn't he have credibility? He's already been proven in a previous case to be a Kafron, meaning there was a different Alva in the past. The Lova denied the Alva, and we were able to deduce evidence that the Lova was lying, and he was denying something that he really has to pay. Once he was kofer one time, he doesn't have any liability anymore, he forfeits his liability, and he can no longer be nemet to say parati. Again, it has to be a Maisa Bezdin, because otherwise the Lovin could play La Adam, and that he could be believed on to say that he never got the most. That we have to worry about. But to say Parati, that he's not going to be believed because he's already a Kafron. But in a normal case, if someone's not a Huxa Kafron, then for sure we would not be able to return the Shtar Milveh to the Malveh, because we have to be worried about the fact that the Lova is honest and he should be trusted to say Parati. Rav is not happy with this. Omar Rav Mishum de Huxa Kafron Chada Zimnes Su Lo Para Klal. Does it mean that because one time person was a Kafron, therefore from now until doomsday we don't believe him? We suspect that he's not going to pay up any of his chovos, because on one occasion he was caught on a lie, and therefore as far as any other person, we're going to distrust him when he says Parati. Anyone else other than this Huxa Kafron is believed to put forward a claim of Parati, but this guy who was kofer one time and then he wasn't careful about his shtar, and the shtar still exists in the world, he's got to be mafsid. We got to assume that there's no possibility of Parati, and we're going to give the shtar back to the Malva. Rav is not willing to buy into that. Ela Amar Rava Masnisim Vishtar Chaltosa Viadrachtu Kinereb Zera. Let's go back to our original interpretation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about a case of shtaris that were given over to the hand of the Malva, certifying that Bezdin allows the Malva to collect and confiscate the karka of the Lova. And in such cases, as we said before, the reason why the Lova is not believed to say, well, I went ahead and I took advantage of my rights to redeem the karka, is because he would have to get a shtar mecher, because there's a new kinyan over here. Ukir Rabbi Zera, as Reb Zera interpreted earlier, that this Mishnah is talking about a case of shtare chaltosa ve'adrachta. Now at this point, we'll take a break. The Gemara now is going to discuss the status of a Kafron. And B'li Neder, we'll pick that up in the next Shia. So we're here on the bottom of Daf Tes Zayin Amid Beis.